Welcome to Volante Elevate, where we explore what the world of payments will look like tomorrow by talking to the experts who are building it today. Your host for each episode, Volante's Chief Marketing Officer, Vinay Prabhakar. Ready to take your payments IQ to new heights? Let's get started.
Thanks, everybody, for joining this episode of Volante Elevate. Today, we are going to be talking about build, buy, or both, the CIO take on payments monetization. And this is an important topic because today it's not easy being a bank payments technology leader. On the one hand, business stakeholders are demanding faster time to market, better customer experience. On the other hand, operations teams are asking for higher STP, or they're being asked for higher STP and better analytics. And then on the budget side, I think we all know that a considerable amount of the budget is consumed by compliance and something called KTLO, which we're going to learn a little more about in this episode. So that right balance of build versus buy, or build and buy, as we're going to explore for payments modernization, is very important right now. And to help us with that, we are going to be talking to Dan Pilling, who's an executive advisor in payments and former CIO of Barclays. Dan has tackled these challenges and lived to tell the tale. Dan, welcome to Volante Elevate.
Thank you very much for the invite.
Let's start, Dan, by just hearing a little bit about yourself and your background, how you got into this business and your role at Barclays.
Yeah, sure. It's been just over 30 years in the payments industry. My first job actually was in payment operations, where I spent 2 or 3 years at the coalface, which was extremely valuable, really learning payments flow, and also what it's like to be within the operational environment as one of the key customers of the payment systems that I would go on to develop. After a period there, I moved into technology change organization, where we were involved in payments transformation programs. I then moved into a bit of management consultancy roles, a stint in Germany with the introduction of the euro, and then year 2000, before returning to the UK and was involved in some large scale payments transformation programs for some tier one banks. I joined Barclays in 2007. And I then took on the role as the payments CIO for Barclays in 2016, a role that I did for 7 years, where I had accountability globally for the payments applications for Barclays, covering UK, Europe, Asia, and the US.
So it's interesting. You actually started out in payments operations, as you say, you know, at the coalface. Just tell us a little bit about what that was like. It was, you know, repairing payments, doing things manually. Did you have software to do things? What was the world like when you started in it?
Yeah. Well, January the 4th, 1993, I think, was my first day in the office. So just over 30 years ago. It was all manual and it was all paper, zero STP. We used to get one of the jobs was to go and get the latest run of payments from the printer, bring it back, divide up the work, distribute it, and then manually key pretty much from scratch a lot of this information onto a pretty basic computer terminal. And then second step, check it all, literally field by field, as the verifier and process the payment. So it was highly, when I say highly manual, it was 100% manual versus today. Obviously, we achieved nearly 100% STP. So the industry has moved significantly just in that one aspect due to technology. But yeah, it was a very educational way to learn about payments and how they flow around the world.
And one of the reasons I think that we can agree it's educational is that as you move to different roles, you retain an understanding of what it is like to be in that operations world, right? And to have or not have the right technology, the right software to get the STP and the results and so on. And also, I think it's interesting, if we look at payments over the period of 20 to 30 years, right, on shorter timescales, a day, a week, a month, the world of payments doesn't change that much, right? But if you look at it on longer timescales, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, and certainly decades, it has changed massively. I mean, you know, real-time payments, ISO 20022, as you said, now almost all digital, 100% STP versus zero STP. So it has been quite a journey. And at an organization like Barclays, you have led that journey towards digitization, modernization, and so on. Before we talk about the nature of that journey, just let's get oriented on the kind of team and organization you had at Barclays. How many people did you have in your organization?
It varied year to year, depending on the book of work and the budgets that we got assigned. But at its peak, it was probably around 1,200 people, split geographically across numerous sites in the UK, Europe, UAE, India, and then the US. So multiple sites across those geographies. As far as scale on sort of systems, I'd say, again, it depended. Did vary a little, but are approximately 100 odd systems, and each year we'd probably be running about 80 odd change programs or projects.
So 1,000 people, 100 systems, 80 projects, and you know, to some of us that may seem like a large number of people, but my guess is that a lot of the time it always felt like, you know, even with 1,000 people, there just weren't enough people to do all the work. I mean, if you've got 80 projects, that's a lot of projects to spread even 1,000 people around.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we scaled up and down using strategic partners. So that was not all permanent staff. We had a core of permanent staff, and then we scaled up as we required, depending on, again, budget allocations. And a lot of the demand came from the industry, mandatory change, industry change, which we obviously weren't fully in control of. But yeah, a decent sized organization to do a lot of change. There is a point there, though, that you can't continually throw heads at a problem. You can't just keep on adding and expect to scale like that. The reality is that there's only so much you can probably do, especially with legacy technology. And that is why, you know, moving to more modern technology where you can implement change quicker and in a more agile and safer manner, it has also been a significant change in the last 20 or 30 years.
And in order to effect that change, you need a budget. That's a basic requirement. And I'm sure that was a complicated effort in and of itself. So if you can educate us about how in your role you went, how did you go about requesting a budget? How did you go about allocating a budget, you know, stakeholders, and then deciding what it was spent on, et cetera? It would be really nice for us to get an insight into that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, first and foremost, it would be underpinned by a bank and a business, and ultimately then a payment strategy. So that will be a 3 to 5 year vision and strategy as to where we want to take the payments business within the bank. Then there's obviously an aspect of affordability to execute the change. And then a big driver also is what is effectively mandatory or industry change that we have to implement to stay operating as a business. More recently, a good example would be ISO 20022, or the implementation or mandation of implementation of instant payment schemes, as an example, which are really not by choice. So once we have that framework, we would then categorize change that the business require, change that operations colleagues require to drive a better operational process, change the technology organization wants to bring in, and obviously the industry. And they would be put into effectively buckets of change. It could be, as you mentioned before, KTLO, that's keep the lights on.
So keep the lights on. Yeah, no, thank you. I learned that from you, Dan. So
KTLO, keep the lights on. So one of the most important things for any CIO, but especially a payments one, is systems have got to work, and they've got to work 24/7. So having them fully reliable, available and resilient is absolutely priority number one above all else. And in order to do that, we've got to do the necessary change every year just to ensure that they operate day in, day out, every hour, every minute of every year. Then you have other mandatory and industry related change, such as ISO or something similar to that. And then you'll have change from the business who want to implement new products. They want to go into new geographies, new payment types, new features that they can then in turn offer to their customers. So the change is basically categorized, bucketed up. It's prioritized. Mm-hmm. There's always more demand than there is money. And then we have to prioritize, and then we cut our cloth accordingly, and we then allocate a budget that is based on an annual basis. So big picture, 3 to 5 year, but the budget process runs annually.
And within those buckets then, so different areas of change, right? The KTLO, I assume, just so I want to make sure I understand that, that does not include the compliance, or it does?
There could be regulatory or compliance related change as well that comes from the regulators that would be categorized separately from our keep the lights on change, which is something we ourselves recognize we need to do in order to keep the systems up, running, healthy, updated, and ideally modernized.
Yeah. And speaking of that modernization then, in your experience, what's the split, right? Are we looking at 80% on KTLO, 10% on compliance, 10% on modernization or innovation? Is it a different kind of thing? I know it's hard to generalize, but give us your read on that.
I mean, what I would say is that if you think about change that you have to do, and in that I would put regulatory change, industry change, KTLO change, you don't really have a choice. You just got to do it, versus what I'd sort of say to discretionary change, which is typically what the business want to do. It's, I would say very broadly, you're 75-25, 80-20, something like that, whereby the discretionary aspect of the budget is, because it can be as little as 20%. And then the 80% is really must do change that would be formed of KTLO, industry, regulatory.
And are there ways to blur those lines? Meaning, you know, could you have a program that's actually both, you know, to get more bang for the buck, as it were? I'm sure there are tricks of the trade, right, that you use to do that.
Yeah, yes, there's all kinds of tricks of the trade that people will normally have a go to classify something to get their project approved. But yeah, and do the lines blur? Absolutely. And one very good example is, you know, it's so important to keep modernizing payment platforms. If you maintain legacy, the cost of change goes through the roof. The time to change goes through the roof. People retire, you lose the knowledge. The risk goes up. Resilience and availability goes up. So it's so important to continue to modernize and implement new platforms rather than constantly trying to patch up old legacy platforms. Now, often there is not a budget to do that big modernization. But one of the ways that, you know, I adopted there was, when you have a mandatory change that is industry driven or regulatory driven, you take the opportunity using that budget to not only meet the requirements of the industry or the regulation, but also to modernize at the same time. So you sort of kill two birds with one stone, and it may well be you choose to replace a platform in order to meet a regulatory requirement or an industry requirement, which you would also like to have done as part of your modernization strategy as well, which might not have been funded if the industry or regulatory requirement was not there, if that makes sense.
No, it does. I mean, you've got to be efficient and smart, right, about how that money is spent and allocated. And sometimes having the same dollar or pound, you know, or euro serve a couple of different purposes, a couple of different masters is the right way to go. So I think that's a good segue then to the how. Okay, so what we've talked about is what your landscape is, number of people you have, systems, and 100 systems, by the way. It's a lot of systems to keep track of. And we've talked a little bit about how the budget is, how you look at the budget from an allocation perspective. But then there's also, how do we actually do it? How do we maintain? How do we modernize? And that's where the question of build versus buy, right, is so important. Is it fair to say that, I don't know, 15 or 20 years ago, right, the approach would have been mainframe oriented? There might be some vendor systems, but essentially a large bank like a Barclays or any tier one bank would have invested a lot in custom made, highly customized systems for everything, whether it's payments, lending, what have you. And then over the years, other technologies have come up, cloud, real-time processing, ISO 20022, and so on. And there's still probably a very high need for customization and tailoring. Yes, for a large organization, you can't use exactly the same payment system as any other organization. But off your 1,000 people, as you said, 80% are spending their time on the KTLO and compliance, and they're not really, you don't have that many people for modernization. So how do you approach that build versus buy question? You know, how do you decide, okay, we're going to do this in-house and we're going to do this with a provider, you know, and then we'll talk about what kind of providers those might be. But let's just start with how you go about that, making that decision.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the first thing I'd say is there's no one single answer that covers all banks. The appetite for build versus buy versus a hybrid approach will vary. Now, in the payments world, I think there's a few key points that banks will think through when they come to the, do I want to predominantly buy or do I want to build or somewhere in between? Now, if payments is a low volume, it's not a core of their core business, they're not driving revenue, and there's no real mature or capable technology sort of department within the bank, then you're much more going to be slanted toward buying services, whether that be payments as a service that is now available today that it definitely wasn't 20, 30 years ago. However, if you are a bank that sees payments as its core business, high volumes, it's like the engine room of the bank, it supports multiple other businesses, there is a high technology skill base within the bank, then the appetite to build is going to be far greater. So you've sort of got those as the two extremes. You very rarely see anyone only buy or only build. So actually the reality is that you've got this hybrid approach, and it's a case of how far you move the dial towards, are you more predominantly buy with a little bit of build, maybe with help of SI partners, or are you sort of the other way around? And again, that depends on those key drivers I just spoke about. So I think the drivers for hybrid, which I think is where most people will land, is.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, Dan, but I just wanted to, let's talk a little bit before we go to hybrid, right?
Yeah.
I think many of our audience may be aware of this, but just at a simple level, pros and cons of a buy strategy versus a build strategy, right? Each has its pros and cons, which is why we try to combine them. But before we talk about the combination, yeah, let's talk about each one in isolation a little bit and just understand what those pros and cons are.
Okay, so if you buy, and again, if you have let's say as a good example now with instant payment schemes, you've got the opportunity to buy through a payments as a service, often cloud-based solution, off a modern technology vendor. Now, the benefit of that is time to market. Effectively, you know, it's a service that is available to you that you could effectively implement in a relatively small time frame. So with fairly minimal integration points, if you want a very simple vanilla offering. So, you know, the modern technology will allow now, obviously, connections through API, and you can effectively be onboarded with a new payment scheme. It could be FedNow, SEPA Instant, RTP in the US, relatively quickly. Years ago, that could have been a multi-year, tens of million pound project. That now becomes something that can be available to a bank relatively quickly and relatively cheaply.
Right. No, that's right. And then also there's a benefit of the provider handling the compliance, right? The SOC 1, the SOC 2, and all of that complexity that is pushed, that's pushed onto the provider. So your resources are freed up, right?
So exactly that. So you're effectively saying to the provider, who you're responsible for making sure every year all the industry updates are done. You know, you're all those sort of KTLO type things, if we talked about before, really falls on the provider of those services rather than back on the bank if they've built them themselves. So you're relying on that vendor to provide that opportunity. With the cloud-based infrastructures that are out there today as well, those providers can scale up and down. Now, if you have it all in-house and you're not on the cloud, then you're having to potentially buy a lot of infrastructure just in case you have that one peak day. And that's a very expensive way to run your business. If you're only peaking once a month or whatever else it is like that, that's the benefit of obviously of the cloud technology that often goes with these payment provided solutions on the full buy side. Having said
I was just going to say that scaling would be particularly important, for example, for real-time payments, where even large organizations, institutions, are not starting with much volume relative to the traditional payments flows, right? So whatever it is, a few hundred, a few thousand payments a day, you know, for some that's a lot, for some that's a little, that it's still low relative to the others, which means you don't want to go into real-time payments or instant payments with a huge upfront investment. And that's where the cloud and PaaS come in. So let's switch then to the build side. That's okay. Mm. There are many advantages to build, perceived advantages as well as actual advantages. So, you know, we've talked about why for certain kinds of organizations it would be much more beneficial to go with a provider and buy that and outsource that. Tell us about organizations or the right fit of organization for a build approach. You know, why would in this day and age an organization choose to build anything in payments, really?
Yeah, and the answer to that one really is that there are certain banks that very much treat payments as a business rather than just something they have to do to comply. They may want to build additional capabilities that are competitive to that bank and their own customer base that won't come through just simply having a vanilla off-the-shelf service from a provider. So they may want to build additional capabilities and services around that core offering of instant payments or whatever it may well be, or cross-border international payments. So that's one aspect. And they can build their own capability and retain the IP. They're not reliant on going to a vendor to get a change. They can get the change done themselves. If they're a modern and mature technology outfit, they should be able to execute that quite quickly, gain competitive advantage potentially. And then the other thing is that whilst it sounds very simple, simply to buy, the reality is there's always some degree of integration. You have to integrate into the bank's infrastructure. It could be their financial crime systems, their accounting platforms, their credit systems, all kinds of platforms. I mean, that landscape can be as many as 30 or 40 systems. So you've got a core payment engine sitting in the middle, but it needs to talk to either real time or end of day to many systems. Now, that integration, again, is a key part of building any payments platform. And a vendor or a payment provider can't do that for you. Or if they can, they'll certainly charge you specific charges for doing that integration work.
So Dan, let's move from there to the question of then build and buy. Okay. I think we've established why a buy approach makes sense, and that does make sense for a lot of banks. We've established why a build approach makes sense. But I think we both have the belief that we are in a place now with the evolution of technology where it is possible to actually do both. Okay. And what I'd like you to do, if you can, is describe, right, the kind of architecture or infrastructure or approach that would facilitate this ideal combination of build and buy. You know, what would you want to build? What would you want to buy? And how would you put those things together?
Yeah, and I think here you take the best of both. And personally, I think this is the answer. Some form of hybrid approach is the answer. It may vary per bank. But very simplistically, the way I would pitch it is, if it is a commodity type capability, which is basically standard for everyone, you know, it could be a gateway to a clearing. It could be just the simple processing of an instant payment, an instant payment in Europe or the US, all now using ISO. So that's a big thing now. We're moving to a standardized messaging format across multiple clearing schemes now. So making that base payment and getting it to a clearing via a gateway, I would deem to be a commodity type service. No competitive edge. It's just got to work. It's got to be, you know, highly performant, highly available, highly resilient, scalable, as we've talked about before. Perfect thing, in my view, to buy. To your point earlier, the provider or the vendor is accountable for making sure it's always up to date. Every year, the rule books change or the industry changes. That's done by the payment provider. And if that payment provider have got multiple customers, they have the economy of scale to upgrade it once and roll it out to many. So the cost that comes back to the people who are buying those services is significantly less than if they were having to do that themselves every year. Now, the one thing that you can then overlay on top of that is if you wanted to build additional services around those commodity type capabilities that we talked about that are unique and bespoke to the bank, that they can retain the IP, those are the bits that you can effectively build yourself around that commodity layer. You may also, we talked about the integration layer, the integration aspects of how you call that commodity service. And again, modern technology through APIs is now making that much more available than it was 10, 20 years ago. So I think that's where you start to build that hybrid approach. Buy the commodity stuff, frankly, has no competitive advantage and it's repeatable, etc. Build the things that you want in your control and that also are closer to your own patch, your own landscape. And then you have that sort of hybrid approach of the two. Now, the key is making sure that what the commodity aspect and what you're changing, that the two consistently work together. And that's where there is, a challenge. Now, some modern technology vendors are now starting to address this and provide tools for banks to complement the commodity and build around that by building extensions and integration points into the bank. So it's becoming a real reality, whereas arguably it wasn't before.
Yeah, that's an interesting point because at Volante, actually, as you may know, that's where we originally started when we were founded, right, is in that area of complex integrations. And that's always been part of the value proposition of the Volante payments platform and what we offer, particularly in the low-code era, because we're finding that is very attractive to banks of all sizes, right? Low code, no code, where they can actually get the configuration capability and the ability to orchestrate and build value-added services and build the non-commoditized layers, right? Around what, as you say, from your perspective as a banker, is very much a commoditized service, that being the actual processing of the payment. So the low code integration capability, I think, is one very important aspect of a modern payments platform. You've mentioned a couple of others. I think APIs, ISO 20022, can you just summarize again from your perspective, right? What would be the characteristics of that payments platform? You obviously expect it to do the commoditized processing, you expect it to do the compliance, but what are the other characteristics of that platform that you would look for that would enable you to be most efficient in building out the non-commoditized services?
Yeah, I mean, for me, and again, I mentioned earlier, essential to replace legacy and move on to modern technology for all the reasons we've mentioned. The sort of table stakes, obviously, along with that, got to be cloud native, cloud agnostic, fully ISO native and compliant, which obviously all previous legacy platforms wouldn't be. APIs, obviously, I would expect them to come with a load of APIs that are effectively available. So they come out of the box with sort of API connectivity into standard accounting platforms. And then this capability, and this is the bit which I know Valente have been in the sweet spot for a number of years, which I think is key, is the extensibility aspect. So offering that low code, no code capability for that extensibility of the commodity is essential. And not only does it provide that extensibility option, but through the low code, no code, it is available to much more people within the technology organization of the bank. It doesn't require necessarily extremely highly skilled technologists that may need years of training. It can be much more accessible for people to effectively use and develop extensions and integration points into the ecosystem. I think those are the key points that you'd want out of that modern architecture.
And I guess that brings us back full circle, really, to getting the most out of those 1,000 people, or 1,500 or 2,000, if you're adding the strategic partners, and the budgets and all the systems that you have to maintain. So, Dan, thank you. We are just about at the end of our time here. I think we've covered a lot of really solid topic areas. One closing question for you, if you had a couple minutes with a peer CIO, let's say a CIO who was starting their payments journey, you know, and had just been given some large number of people and systems to manage and to keep the lights on and do compliance and so on. A couple of minutes with a peer CIO, what advice would you give them?
I mean, as we've discussed through this this session, there is a juggling act. There's a lot of demand for change from industry, from the business. And that the demand now is that that is executed at pace, but more importantly, it's executed safely. The one thing you'll never be thanked for is an outage. So it's got to be delivered quickly and safely. So job number one is to continue to keep the lights on, keep the service running for the bank and its customers. What would I do? First 90 days in the job, obviously evaluate what you've got, what people, systems, vendors are in place, where are the key risk areas, work with the stakeholders, build out that 3 to 5 year plan if it doesn't exist, and then really proactively look to modernize the estate as quickly and safely as possible, utilizing budgets in the most creative way that that is available. But that opportunity now more than ever is available to do, at pace. And there are vendors out there, obviously, including Valente, who can help clients with that journey.
Thank you so much, Dan. I really appreciate you taking the time. We have been speaking to Dan Pilling, who's an executive advisor and payments expert and the former CIO of Barclays, on this episode of Valente Elevate, talking about build, buy, or both the CIO take on payments modernization. Thanks, Dan, for joining us.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that episode of Valente Elevate, where we explore what the world of payments will look like tomorrow by talking to the experts who are building it today. Subscribe to Valente Elevate on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Podbean, or visit us on www.valentatech.com/elevate.